comedy too. And then if you're a radio station with an FCC license, you get to deal with the FCC and perhaps the CPB. So it becomes, you know, my God. So we decided to create a calendar. And once we created it, we thought, well, why not put some of our own, you know, monthly things, deadlines, things we do every February, in the same place, which is, I guess you could consider that compliance with our own agreements with each other.
Okay. Yes.
There you go.
Thank you.
Sure. And also, there's the always tricky working relationship of the management and the board. Mm-hmm. And the board is supposed to oversee that everything is going fine. And some people say that especially applies to compliance, that the board is really supposed to know that your organization is in compliance with things. So what's a new board member going to do to think they have any kind of handle on that? How are they going to get a clue? It's almost like a setup, you know, to not give those board members, we have a board binder now, we didn't used to, hand them a roadmap that includes something like this. As it says in the little GRC intro, this is a continually evolving document. Mm-hmm. Like every few months we adopt an improved one, something changes, or we think of something to add. So it evolves continuously. Maybe someday we'll feel like we're done, but then something will change. So that's what I brought with me, and we'll talk about it. Michi, as I understand, works in the compliance arena a lot with different stations. So we haven't even spoken before the conference, but since it's compliance, she's here to help everyone with questions and to help amplify anything that comes
basically
up.
Basically, my expertise is, if you want to call it that, is more around the FCC aspect of things, not necessarily the tax and, you know, the stuff that would normally like require a CPA to do. So I'm just here for any questions or anything that might come up from an FCC
nice.
Perspective. Otherwise, I'm a ghost here.
How about CPB? Do you do that?
Not really. I don't really do anything with CPB at all.
Because their entire...
Because, you know, there's
thing
no...
is huge.
You know, I'm mainly LPFM, and LPFM does not really, you know, does not get any CPB funding, so...
Oh. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
The numbers of CPB, like, if you have $100,000 or more a year, then you can apply for CPB. I don't know if any LPFMs have $100,000.
Oh, okay. Okay. So why don't we do a really quick go around so we know who you guys are and where you're at in your process, whether you are part of a brand new organization that doesn't even have bylaws. Oh no, this is me going to the governance workshop. We're going to do that in the governance workshop, find out that specific thing. But just kind of quickly so then we know who we're talking to.
I'm with a group called Ohio Valley Peace, based in Wheeling, West Virginia. And we've had an organizational structure for a number of years, but it's not been focused around radio, so that part's all new. And we have a pending application at MX.
So you're LPFM now?
Yeah.
Okay. Yet to be on air.
Yeah. Yet to be everything.
Yeah. Well, great to come here. How about you?
Malachi Muncy. I'm with under the Big Cafe Outreach Center, doing business under the Fortit Support Network in Killeen, Fortit, Texas. Our organization's been around since February 2009. the filing window for this LPFM license. We largely just operated a space that served as a resource center and a center for active for organizing active duty service members and military communities around peace and social justice issues. And we have a CP that was granted in January. So.
Nice. Congratulations.
My name is Kathy Urch, and I am a board member of a community group that is applying for a 501c, but has one CP for a low power station, is MX on another CP for a low power station because we've got a public safety designation. And we're pretty clear on our structure and certain things like that. And I have done a community / student full power in the past. In the 80s, I put one of those on the air.
Nice.
And it's still on the air. And it's in compliance.
Congratulations.
I'm Gladys Pedraza-Burgos. I'm from Rochester, New York. And I'm part of a not-for-profit agency that started in the 1968 called Ibero-American Action League. We're a Hispanic-serving agency. We're the largest in Western New York, outside of New York City. And we provide services around health, education, and advocacy. And have programs and services from pre-K all the way up to senior citizens and adults with developmental disabilities, as well as housing. So we are right now in MX. There's light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train, so I think we're good.
My name is Mike Yates. I'm also from Rochester, New York, and we are affiliated with the Multi-Use Community Cultural Center, which is a theatrical venue, a nonprofit theatrical venue in Rochester, and we have CP. We've been kind of plugging away on the path to airing actual broadcast at the end of this year and building the infrastructure of the station.
So you're low power?
Yeah, I'm sorry, yes, low power.
So far we've had, everybody's been low power so far. Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not from the power station. My name is Parker. I'm from WNT in Whitesburg, Kentucky. It's part of Apple Shop, which is a larger media collective. It's been around for since 1969.
I'm sorry, where?
WNT in Whitesburg, Kentucky. Oh. It's part of Apple Shop, which is a media collective. And the radio station's on the air since 85, some stuff that I should know, I guess. But there's one person who's been doing all this who's now retired and does it as a volunteer. This kind of all exists in his head and me, so it's really good to see this all on a piece of paper. Thank you.
So are you, what's your role?
I'm a co-general manager now.
So that's why you're the one who has to now go on it? Okay. Yeah, it's thick. How about you?
Hi, I'm Preston Poe, and I'm with the WPHX Phoenix. We have our CP. Where this happened was there's a decommissioned fire station in Ruskin, Florida that became a cultural center. Some people happened to go outside and notice that there's a 100-foot tower, and then they heard about this LPFM idea, so they applied for that. So we've got a committee that's working to get the rest of this in place. A lot of our demographic is older people, so we're interested in creating some unique content for them. We also have a Spanish-speaking population, a lot of migrant workers in the area, and then we have the usual cross-section of Americans. So we have a lot to figure out. We're just kind of taking it step by step. And at this point, we have about 12 months left to get all this together. So.
Well, nice. There's a tower already.
Yeah.
How about that?
I'm about the tower.
Right.
Yeah,
the tower was donated to us, too.
Oh,
that's great. My name is Nellie, and I'm with KXCJLP out of Cave Junction, Oregon, and we have about a year to get on the air. So.
William King, Omaha, Nebraska. Just got accepted for a filing, so we just awaited, just waiting on the CP. And so I've been doing fundraising for a while. Just applied for a grant last night, just put it in last night before midnight.
Wow.
Or two of them, actually.
Which organization are you with?
Omaha Community Broadcasting.
That's were you in competition with
Gould? Yeah, Gould.
And you were working with the congressman?
Yeah, Lee Terry is actually the co-sponsor of the Local Community Radio Act.
You and I have talked on the phone many times.
Okay, oh, so you...
Michi.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
It's
summer.
It's summer.
So she's been very helpful as well as Prometheus,
yeah,
as well as Lee Terry office. Every time I call, he's been very, very proactive. And we're looking at some legislation. So this doesn't happen again.
I've been working very closely with Lee Terry's office on the whole Cesar Gruel situation. He's been involved with us with the fraudulent applications that have been filed all over the country.
Yeah.
So we've been trying to get some things going. And,
just to mess things up or what?
No, trying to improve things, and you know.
But I mean, why would people
repeater stations?
Yeah,
basically, what it was we have Cesar Gruel runs an organization called Hispanic Christian Community Network. Mm-hmm. It's based out of Texas. He is the licensee right now of about 40 low-powered TV stations. He set up all these sham organizations across the country to quote-unquote expand his mission. There were a few legitimate applications that were caught up in that. We've actually identified at least one right now in Florida, and we're trying to get them fixed up so they can actually be a licensee. But we're in the process right now. So we're in the process right now of trying to get that, you know, we're trying to get a lot of these applications dismissed, the ones that are illegitimate, so that way these channels can be freed up and hopefully given to other people who better deserve them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of them are going to go into the hands of the translators.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have somebody in Texas to thank for that. I'm not very happy with the whole thing.
To thank for what? Somebody in Texas to thank for?
For us losing potential channels for LPFM.
Well, you know, that's kind of messagery that I can take back to the congressman. I just shot a commercial with him. I mean, I have a direct link with him. And like this office has been very proactive because Omaha, I don't know if you know, is one of the poorest areas of the country. So I take this very seriously. And that's his responsibility as far as, and plus he's the author. So it's election year. So right now is the time to get things done. So if that's a problem, then I'll communicate with him when I get back.
We're hoping that some things might happen. I'm actually trying to push for a son of LCRA to try to unleash us from some of the restrictions that the LCRA has put upon us, and hopefully if we have a friendlier...
What's the LCRA?
The Local Community Radio Act.
Oh, okay.
So rather than an amendment, you want a fresh bill? Well, we would like to get some of the, like, for example, I'd like to get the rule out of the, I'd like to get the statute out of there that requires the codification of the 73807 minimum spacing, so that way we could use engineering tactics to try to bring in stations. It would give us more flexibility to have 250-watt stations. I'm already going to be pushing 250 watts in the Class C4 proceeding that's going on right now. But that's kind of way off track of this workshop, so let's...
Well, my opinion, since so many people are in the... Everybody but you are in the situation of having a construction permit and we're going to get it together,
mm-hmm.
probably what we'll spend most of our time doing is people asking you questions, you know?
Okay.
Or whatever issues you guys want to bring up.
Yeah.
You missed the intro to this form, but it's kind of clear at the top. This is just a tool that our station uses to try and keep track of the millions of regulatory things we have to do.
Oh, so we got to follow. We got.
all these rules now?
You don't have all these rules. No.
Yeah.
This is an example, like it says at the top. This is just an example of what our station deals with.
Now, are you for-profit or non-profit?
We're non-profit, full-power station in California, 27 years old.
Okay.
And you have paid staff, right? That accounts for a lot of this. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what's your ratio between paid and volunteer?
We have 3 full-time people, I think, about 7 part-time paid people, a few more paid news stringers, and 120 volunteer programmers, and probably about 40 other volunteers that are steady. So, I mean, I feel fortunate about all of that. We're struggling to pay all the staff people, I'll tell you that.
Now, have you guys thought about, because I see payroll taxes, I really don't want to pay payroll taxes, and what's the other tax you got to pay when you have employees?
Workers' comp?
Workers' comp. So I'm thinking about actually setting up independent contractors. Then that way you don't have to worry about filing as far as all those regs.
Well, there's laws about who can be independent contractors.
Right.
What laws?
There are so many laws.
Come on.
This is the basic theme here of like, how are we going to get through this maze of so many laws? This is a tool that your station can create specific to you and what you deal with, so you don't miss stuff and then end up in a bind. And you know.
I'm just curious too, because I know for us in New York State, there, even though we could go that route, and we're a not-for-profit agency, so sometimes we have independent contractors. But even though we don't have to do the workers' comp and the unemployment insurance piece, there are insurance that the contractors receive. So
we had to have insurance on them, or they had to have insurance on themselves.
Exactly.
Well, especially with the Affordable Care Act, you know, everybody's got to have something.
Yeah. So you might be sidetracking one, but really what you're doing is you're shifting the burden to the whoever that contractor is.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I mean, our role is, I mean, my philosophy is that we need to create entrepreneurs. 40% of our work base is social service. You'll never develop wealth. And so my theme is you come in as a business, you're an independent contractor, you're a business. And as a business, our model, as far as our platform of 275,000 people, will help you in your business. We got too many servants.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel an only way to develop wealth, especially since we have this medium. I'm trying to think in the absolute on how we can help people. And most before we got into this corporate world where we push everything into one thing, everybody had many skills, and we supported all of us, and that was a better community. And so, we had way more. You did something, he did something, she did something. Everybody did something versus working.
Right.
And I think we need to get back to what
work.
You know, So, but works. And that's what entrepreneurs, small businesses, that's what actually works. And so then that's why I'm pushing the integrated contractor. We are called 95.7 the boss. And our reason why I call it the boss is the attitude. You gotta be the boss of your destiny.
That's right.
But forget, I'm tired of excuses. I come from the projects. My mom couldn't read, still can't read. I still read for her. She's 80-something. And so and my degree is in behavioral science. To me, this is research. This is research. And that's why I'm so proactive as far as on the legislative side, because tomorrow's not promised to us. We got to do it today. And so that's why I'm pushing the 1099 workers. I'm using the tax code system.
Yeah, everyone likes the simplicity, you know. You can
it's real
look
simple.
Up, I think it's easy to look up the rules.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no expert. My sense of it is, for example, if you have a bookkeeper who works off-site on her own equipment and has other clients, then there's absolutely no doubt that that person can be an independent contractor.
Yeah.
Those are all other factors. Is anybody else good at this?
I work for Gannett, which is the company that owns USA Today, and we, in our various newspapers across the country, we're using a lot of what we call freelance workers, and we would call them, they would be 1099 workers. And we were lawyered up to help. We had a lot of expensive lawyers do this, and then all the rules came down to every newspaper. And the rules were, like you said, my freelancer to write for me cannot enter my building. My freelancer to write for me cannot use my laptop. They could use my laptop, but they couldn't use the company's laptop.
Not enter the building?
But this is, I mean, because these people have something to sue for. You know, they were an $8 billion corporation, now worth $4 billion. But, so they had something to sue for, so they really lawyered this up. And they were very strict on us as managers. They could not, so, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to come down on your LPFM that hard, but the heart of the law is, if you provide somebody an equipment and space to work, then there's something of an employee, and they can in a suit or a labor move, claim that they were denied employee rights. So you just have to be very careful the way you set it up. The thing is, and they have to work off-site. You can't have people doing radio shows and pay them 1099 money unless they do it from their home laptop into your board.
Uh-huh.
Right, because of
that.
They can
do behind the scene work far as
not
work.
In your office. They okay. can't come in your office because then.
Is that where are you from?
the entity that I did this for was the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Okay, in Ohio. Okay.
Well, it's in Cincinnati, Ohio, but this is a corporate law from Gannett owns USA Today and 84 other newspapers across the country and about 48 television stations. So.
Interesting.
And then they had us have all our freelancers sign a new contract once the internet came up, because their old contract didn't cover internet rights. And then when I offhandedly mentioned, well, you know, Ray Schaefer makes more than me writing freelance because he would go to every prep basketball game and write it, so he made more than me an editor, they fired him because he was making too much as a freelancer.
Mm.
Because if he made more than his manager, well, then he could claim he was an employee, which he wasn't ever going to do. Yeah, so
it's complicated.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with it.
Jim, could you go through the list and kind of show us like what applies to the majority of us as LPFM, what's full power, what if you have many employees you have to do, just to help us sort out what we're seeing?
Probably. I've handed them all out, but I can find it quickly on my laptop.
All you do is add a more than 1099
workers. Let me talk while I'm looking for it. I mean, I know it's right here. Just about, once again, this thing, the management and board thing. Why don't you guys read those part about the board's role and the manager's role? That might be so theoretical for most of you, though. You're not even there yet. Maybe that's
real. Our board doesn't meet monthly, so is it just when the board is regularly scheduled to meet? But we meet every other month.
Mm-hmm. Well, that depends on what the deadline is.
What do you mean?
On our calendar, we record a deadline. We record all the deadlines we can think of. And then they just get dealt with. Whenever there's a board meeting, the station manager puts it in her report. Ideally, she says whether she's completed it. She doesn't always mention whether she's completed it. Okay.
So these are the actual board responsibilities and not the station?
The board is responsible, usually, when you have a manager, to oversee that the manager is taking care of everything, including compliance. And some of the documents I've read, like in our organization's board evaluation forms that we use at our evaluations, the very top thing is, have you made sure you are compliant with all the laws of the land, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the very top thing. And that had made an impression on me as a board member. Oh, how am I going to do that? Hence this list. And it can be super awkward if you're a board member to bring up to the manager, even at a board meeting, hey, have you filed the taxes? Have you
I mean, not taxes, but the IRS report? Have you sent in the payroll taxes? You know, that can be kind of awkward, and you can kind of feel like you're sticking your neck out in almost all board situations. So if you have a tool like this, it brings it up for you. And then everyone as a board, as a unit, is asking the manager. It's institutionalized. So there doesn't have to be this like weird tension of, oh, what's that board member? Do they have an agenda? Or what's up with them? You know, I've been that person, so I know that.
Well, then it just becomes part of the job description.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's expected and not a surprise. And yeah. Okay. So looking at the monthly ones, payroll tax deposits if you have employees. Agenda posted. That's one of our own rules, plus it's a CPB requirement. Do you guys get CPB?
Yeah, with the new requirements, it's, we're not sure how much longer we're going to be able to. But
yeah, it's very, very thick. Yeah.
What's that, CPB?
That's federal funds that go to stations that have, someone here said, at least $100,000 of income per year.
Corporation.
So you got to make that first before you can apply.
Yeah, that's
so,
what.
Yeah, pretty much at least almost every LPFM out.
Yeah, and whatever.
For everyone else, with a CSA
to continue
that
to receive
the agency.
Oh, so they're going
to
stop it?
So
they're not stopping it, but they're making it so that you have to raise a lot of money. They're tripling what we have to raise every year to receive a grant for
those.
That third thing under monthly, 6 days before board meeting, that's another transparency thing of letting the community know the board is meeting. If you have issues, you show up, you can find out about it. That is important to us, and also it's another CPB requirement to be transparent. I mean, CPB has pages and pages and pages and pages of requirements. It's really daunting. But quite a few of them are about transparency to your community. So, you know, that's a good thing, and that'll keep your station strong, you know, to operate that way. Okay, January 10th, quarterly issues program report, that's FCC.
And for for LPFMs, you do not have this.
Ah.
You do not have an issues. You do not have to keep an issues register for LPFM. Actually, LPFM does not even have a required public file.
Oh.
You have to keep a political file and engineering logs, and that's it.
I said political file. What do you mean by political file?
We talked about this in the intensive yesterday. Political file is basically where if you receive a request for time from a political candidate, whether you accept it or not, whether you accept their, you know, them going on or not, you have to log it. You have to. So basically, you're just keeping a file of all your interactions with political candidates.
Okay.
And then that information, you got to keep that in your station record, so if the FCC comes out and wants to inspect it, it's there.
So we can't do ads. I mean, I asked this earlier. I mean, political ads?
Technically you could, obviously you got to sponsor, you got to identify that those are, that those are sponsored programs. But I can tell you this much right now. Do yourself a favor. Avoid it all together. Also, too, another thing, as I mentioned yesterday, Section 399 of the Communications Act, an LPFM station or any non-commercial educational station cannot endorse a political candidate for office.
Okay, the station, right?
The station cannot. Nobody at the station, you cannot say, well, I think you should vote for Senator Dodd because, you cannot endorse a political candidate. That not only violates the Communications Act, but that also violates a lot of the tax codes. Your 501c, if you have one, that would severely violate that. That's what they're, trying to get the churches for, is to getting, you know, do yourself a favor, don't meddle in politics.
Yeah, I'm already there. That's how I started. I can't
yeah,
get out of it.
I'm talking about your station.
I can't get out of it. Okay, pardon everybody. I gotta fight this. But me, I can endorse some William King, as long as I don't have no logo or nothing on.
If you're not hosting a show on the radio station,
okay, it's not on the radio station.
As long as you're not broadcasting it over
your station's air,
the FCC doesn't care. But,
okay. All right, cool. I'm good.
You know,
I'm good.
But
I won't do that. But
the FCC cares about they care about what goes over the air.
What do you recommend that low power stations do with the stuff that would ultimately end up in a public file? Do you think that people should hang on to that, or just would it just be under like transmitter care? Or
well, the thing is,
we went down. Or
well, the thing is, you've got to, you're going to have to keep some engineering logs. Basically, whenever you go on the air, go off the air. If you have a time you've got to reduce power, always good to keep those engineering logs. Keep them in a place where if somebody from the FCC was to come and say, "I'd like to see your logs." If anybody in that station, anybody in that studio, anybody in your public location will know where to find them.
Is there any reason not to keep that sort of stuff on the cloud, the internet?
If the internet goes down, I don't know. I would definitely keep it handy. I would definitely keep it.
So hard copy.
I would definitely keep hard copy. Yeah, just, do yourself a favor. Keep it hard copy. If you want to also have a version up into the cloud, go for it too. But
does LPFM require the physical signing in of the person in control of the station for the time period?
No.
Like full power?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Can LPFMs do advertising or underwriting?
LPFMs can do underwriting, yes. They fall under the full NCE rules where it comes to underwriting.
Why don't you talk about that a minute?
So we can't do ads either? Or acknowledgments?
You can do acknowledgments.
The key thing is you can do acknowledgments, you just cannot
do any kind of... There's a difference between an acknowledgement, an underwriting acknowledgement, and an advertisement. An advertisement promotes a product, where an acknowledgement is just acknowledging the people who support your station. So, like...
Come on down, the cat.
That's a call to action.
So basically,
the few big no-nos that you may run into are calls to action. Come on down and see us here. or call today. Call now.
The lowest prices in town on such and
such. That's qualitative. That's a qualitative statement. We are the best. We are the best in town. We are, we're voted number one. We were voted best in Phoenix by the New Times. You got to be careful with those kinds of statements. Prices,
including free, according to one of the stations.
Including free.
Oh, right on.
Also including interest rates for banks.
Ooh.
So you cannot say, we've got a loan at 7.9%. We got a loan at 5.9%. You can't not. Our mortgage rate today is 5.9%. That is illegal. You cannot. We've gotten clarification on that. So those are the.
Could you?
Oh man.
Raffle off kind of tickets and things that they do that you hear on the air sometimes. Like the third caller to call in is going to get free tickets to. The station got some free tickets to give away.
Yeah, you probably can. You can probably do if it's a sponsored item, you have to state that these tickets were provided by.
Yeah, I've heard things
so-and-so.
Like, this theater is offering free tickets for tomorrow night.
Yeah, we have two free tickets that were provided to us from
there's
the so-and-so
no
theater.
It's just
Right.
And be the fourth caller right now and you'll win. I don't see an issue with doing that in a non-commercial world.
Raffles in California, and I heard Iowa, probably other states, you have to register to be able to do raffles, and there's a few rules.
Yeah, Kentucky, raffles are highly illegal. You just raise them on a drive. But a giveaway.
That's a giveaway.
Yeah,
because we get some buy in our station.
Yeah, a giveaway is just you call a venue.
Not for profit sometimes to encourage the people we serve to attend something will give us free tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So we can return.
Yeah, also be careful with lotteries and raffles and such like that, because there's also some FCC rules that may apply to you there. That includes, in some cases, the giving out of lottery number results.
Huh.
You can only give them out for your state and the adjacent states, which is a silly rule. I don't know.
You
think
you could do that?
And so we just, at the FCC site, there's a place.
Part 73 of the rules. You know, now there's certain rules don't apply to LPFM there. So best thing, you know, so basically...
So we've got to test the water there, huh?
Well, you just... The rules for LPFM are, I think it's subpart G. It's the 73-800 series of rules, 73.8-something rules. And then in 73-801 is a list of all the other rules in other parts of part 73 that also apply to LPFM. But you're going to find that a lot of rules do not apply to LPFM that apply to the big stations. You know, you're not required to keep, for example, there's no main studio rule with LPFM. Now, in the cases of you all who are doing main studio as a point, there is some rules around that. If we get to the point of where points will be taken into consideration for your LPFM station. So, I mean, like, for example, any of these that became singleton right now, even if they took the pledge point for the main studio, they're not required to keep it. It's only if your points come into play for winning the channel, for aggregating points, or anything like that. If it gets to the point of where those points come into play, then you're subject to the you're subject to those pledges. Whether the FCC is going to enforce them or not, who knows?
So what might a station look like without a main studio? I mean, this is a little divergent, but, I mean...
A kid's back bedroom with a computer, you know, and a
basement.
Wire going out to a transmitter going up to the, you know.
Up to the roof.
Like
up
park.
To the roof.
Yeah, we're getting, gaining the point.
You know, I mean, there's,
it's really not a main studio.
What's the difference between a PSA then? Because a PSA is a call to action.
You don't get paid for carrying public service announcements.
Right.
It's not an app.
But it's call to action though.
They're not supposed to have a call to action.
Public service announcement.
I think.
They're
usually call to action.
They can say the Sierra Club invites you to its benefit February 15th.
So the word is invite. Is that one of the key words?
The key thing is you're not being paid to carry the advertisement.
Right.
You're not being paid to carry the PSA. It's like if you carry something from the Ad Council that has all the music and all the good stuff, and it sounds like a really professionally done commercial.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing is you're volunteering that time. You're donating that time
mm-hmm.
to the Ad Council. You're donating that time to the Sierra Club. You're donating that time to the Ames Historical Society. That's your donation of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's time that you could give to an underwriter.
Yeah,
but you're giving it away as
I
a community service.
I think it's still not supposed to have calls to action.
I
don't know
about you.
Look that up.
You technically could with a nonprofit,
really,
but you just don't want to because then for-profit underwriters will hear it and think that they can.
You're going down a slippery slope if you do.
Yeah.
So
you
can
do
calls.
It for your own
sponsor.
For the
like,
station.
We're holding an event somewhere. Come see us.
Yeah.
And Vandermark tonight.
Yeah.
Or
right.
send
right.
in your
sponsor.
Donation.
Right.
Imperative verb.
Yeah.
The whole
right.
donate
right.
now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When do the FCC laws apply to us? The moment we get the construction permit or when we get
the FCC laws started applying to you when you apply for your application. The moment you hit that send and file button in CDBS, you're there's already FCC rules that apply to you.
But
for things like the raffle or...
Oh, yeah.
So as soon as we apply.
Once you're on the air and you're broadcasting and you've got your program test authority, you're on the air, you know, the rules apply to you.
So it is when we start testing, not necessarily, because most of us are in the run-up phase right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not putting anything over the air yet,
right.
So obviously most of the programming related rules wouldn't apply to you.
Okay, and we can still sell. We can do calls to action on our website, or
you can do whatever you want
exactly.
on your website.
FCC is not regulated.
You know, you got to. You know,
well, for yourself,
yeah,
calls to action. I think the rules apply on the website.
Not necessarily. Just be careful how you promote your website.
So your website couldn't have it couldn't support a certain political candidate.
The problem is this: if you are a 501c, you may not run afoul of the FCC rules, but you may run afoul of state and federal tax cuts.
Okay,
so you got to be careful with that.
Yeah,
you know, anything that you do on outside, anything that's ancillary to your broadcast, you got to make sure you may not run afoul of the FCC, but you may run afoul of other regulations and laws.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one thing you've got to take into consideration if you're thinking about running any kind of for-profit looking banner ads. Or anything on your website, and I think that's going to get some people into trouble.
But you could do a nice banner ad for every show on your station. Like the banner could go, you know, Blues Hour, and then the banner could go.
Yeah, you could do whatever. Yeah, I mean, you know, absolutely. I mean, you know,
you can't sell
to.
That space so much.
So we could say 1,000 acknowledgments for $500 on our website, special for. For the beginning of our station, we couldn't do that.
Yeah, you. I mean,
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, you could. I like to think of it when I've been seeing a lot of these stations coming up, and they're, you know, there's people out there. They're trying to sell like 30s and 60s.
Okay, do
as
anything?
Acknowledgement, and I'm like, you know, first of all, if you have an acknowledgement message. If you have an underwriting message that's more than 30 seconds long, chances are it's going to violate some rule. Chances are it's going to run afoul of something. And there's a lot of examples, because there's been a lot of fines to non-commercial stations and to some LPFMs under what cannot be done. There's a lot of examples out there. Basically, if you look at what these stations were fined for, they'll usually include the scripts of the opposing language, the offending language.
Is there somewhere where we can go research that stuff?
Yeah. You have to just dig into all of the old FCC fines and stuff. I could probably, one of these days when I get a chance to, I'm going to sit down and actually dig up, make something. You know. Also, National Federation of Community Broadcasters, if you're willing to pay for them or for their materials, they have a really good underwriting book, from my understanding. It gives a lot of good information and advice on the whole underwriting process. This is the one thing,
National Federation of Community Broadcasters.
NFCB.
And is that a separate document than the legal book that they have?
I don't know. I'm thinking maybe it's the same. I'm not sure. I'm not that deep into NFCB to know.
And, you know, I think you can subscribe to the legal handbook, which is online, but I've downloaded it on my laptop for my convenience.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can subscribe to it even if you're not a member of NFCB.
Mm-hmm.
Think.
Yes.
Because being a member costs a lot. Maybe that's because our station has so much money. But I imagine for a station with hardly any money, the amount it would cost would be a lot. And
so how many watts are you guys?
It's a percentage.
It's a percentage of your budget.
5,000
so
at least
we have
one of our.
What's
the
percentage of zero?
What's
yours
minus? We're in the hole, so you can just give us some money.
Yeah.
Well, we're trying to get NFCB to a level where they can, where they'll be more welcoming to LPFMs. We just had their conference. Just a few months ago in D.C. that I went to, and they seem to start, they're seeming to start to be a little more open towards LPFM. We had a full day LPFM intensive, similar to what we just had here yesterday there. So I'm hoping that I'm hoping that we can get NFCB to realize that there are a lot of legitimate community stations that are starting to come up that are at the LP level. Now, sure, they may not have the reach of a KMUD or KHOI, but in the area that they do have a reach, they can make just as much of an impact.
So, Michi, what kind of things is the FCC enforcing on these days? Like
EAS. Make sure your emergency alert system is functioning. That's you know, that's the big one. We talked about this in the intensive yesterday, where the top 10 items, but EAS and your underwriting messages, those are the two really big ones. Really, for those are the two big ones for if you have a tower, if you own your tower, and if you're required to light it because of an FAA directive, you know, you got to make sure you're monitoring that. Because if your lights go out, and you know, the FCC could fine you if it's not. If your light goes out, let's just say you do have a tower light and your light goes out, you have to notify the FAA. The FAA, what they'll do is they'll put out a notice to airmen to advise that the lighting is out, so that the pilots can be aware that there's something there. You may not see it, but there's something there.
Do they ever catch anybody not posting their chief operator designation? Like
LPFM doesn't have a chief operator law.
Okay.
There's no rules for chief operators in LPFM.
So the EAS enforcement, is that from visits? They'll visit and they'll ask? Because even though all the EAS these days is like completely digital, there's not a feedback to FCC, say, offices.
No, there isn't.
So it's just a visit.
It's a visit. You know, they're going to want your logs. You know, so either if somebody's monitoring the EAS, they've got to log the messages that come in, or your EAS might have a printer hooked up to it that will print the logs for you. But they're going to want to see you. They're going to want to make sure that your EAS is installed, it's functioning, it's receiving the primary LP1 and LP2 stations as it's supposed to be receiving, and that you're keeping logs and you're carrying the required monthly tests.
All right. I guess my questions probably focus on, I guess, three main areas, you know, in terms of the FCC in particular.
Mm-hmm.
One is licensing and compliance with copyright and all that jazz, how that's done. Maybe you can tell us about that.
Are you talking about the music licensing? That's outside the FCC realm. That would be your BMI, your ASCAP, your CSAC.
Uh-huh.
And if you're streaming, you'll also have Sound Exchange to deal with.
So there's no overlap with the FCC?
No, there's no FCC has no jurisdiction on the copyright law where it comes to music licensing or anything like that.
So what would an LPFM do about music?
Well, they would have to go through ASCAP, BMI, and if you so desire, CSAC. CSAC is the worst of the three. They're the most expensive. They're also the most aggressive, but they also have the smallest library.
Wow.
You could probably do a very successful radio station without having one item from the CSAC repertoire.
If you have a piece of music you want to air, how do you know which license?
Usually it says right on the CD or the media. It usually has a little ASCAP and it'll usually say that. And you can also go to ASCAP's website and you can look up and see, you know, you can look up their entire repertoire.
So everybody who is producing music programming needs to know how to check.
Now, if you carry like local music and such, you know, as long as you have permission from the composer, you know, that's, you know, then you're fine there. It's just that, you know, when you license through ASCAP, that just, you know, quote unquote, helps the composers get paid for their work. You know, and that's, you don't have to worry about, if you're not streaming on the internet, you don't have to worry about Sound Exchange or the RIA or Sound Exchange. You don't have to worry about that. You're not paying the performers. You're only paying the composers, which is your ASCAP and your BMI and your CSAC.
So there are different rules for broadcasting versus streaming?
Yes. Yeah, because back in the old days, it was determined that broadcasting radio was a method of promoting recorded music. Mm-hmm. So there's always been a long-standing exemption, and the recording industry is trying to get this lifted. They've been doing it for many years now to try to get this exemption lifted. But that's why you don't pay the RIAA royalties on recorded music that's played over broadcast radio, and why you have to over streaming. Because there's been a long time exemption that Congress put in many years ago.
So that means if you're not streaming,
you still have to pay the composers. You still have to pay the people who wrote the music. You're just not paying the people who perform the music, if that makes any sense.
I had a question about on this note about sort of the Fort Hood community. Fort Hood has a radio station run by the Army Public Affairs, and generally we don't want to promote their message exactly or what they're talking about. We're sort of it's an interesting relationship we have with Fort Hood. But, I mean, we are veterans and we are in the military community, and there are certain things that we might want to highlight that they run. They don't have a, what would be the rules on using public affairs material or trying to reuse that, or like how would we?
This is from a DOD public affairs.
From a DOD public affairs office.
So it's just from the local Fort Hood. It's not AFN programming or anything. It's just local.
I don't think it's AFN. They have civilians who work in their public affairs office, but I don't think it's AFN. They have there is no Fort Hood radio station. The Army doesn't have a radio station there, but they do have an online component where they air some
yeah. So and basically all I mean that kind of programming is non-commercial in nature. As long as they give you clearance to reuse it,
cool.
That you should be able to reuse it. I'm not aware of any DOD regulation that would prevent you from doing that. There are regulations about using like Voice of America programming, where you have to get clearance through them. So I figured you have to get clearance through the public affairs office of the installation. And then that programming's not going to have commercials in it or anything like that.
Yeah.
So because it's DOD. I think you'll be fine there.
I had a question that came up in our nonprofit board, which seems like a pretty ridiculous question, but I want to come back with some answers. Someone asked, or actually a couple of people asked, about liability of the board if, for example, a programmer starts to go ranting and raving and every possible curse word starts coming out of their mouth, and by some chance somebody from the FCC or gets called in or reported. What is the liability of the board insofar as, you know, punishment, or if someone is trying to, you know, close us down, or, I mean, it seems so unlikely, but I just don't know.
It can go anywhere from an admonishment to a forfeiture.
Like, if there's a huge fine, you know, who's... My community is so poor.
The corporation would be liable.
Right.
That's, you know, your corporation.
So it would be the board.
It would be the corporation that's liable. And as a licensee,
You are responsible for everything that goes over your air, even if it may not be in your direct control. If you've got a wild DJ who likes to say booger too much, you know, kind of the old WKRP and sits you know, or you've got a network program that airs before 10 p.m. that happens to have something you got off the internet that came from a totally different provider, and it just happened to have a few F-bombs in it, mm-hmm. you carried that. You're responsible for it, even though it came from somewhere else.
And the only way the FCC would find out is if...
complaints.
Right.
Somebody complains. Mm-hmm. They record your air, and they can file a complaint with the FCC. All they have to do is just say the time that it happened, the station that it happened on, and if possible, a transcript or recording of the programming in nature. A lot of stations are now recording their own programming and keeping a log of it. Mm-hmm. Keeping archives of so many days of their programming.
Mm-hmm. But that's not a requirement.
It's not a requirement. Not in this country. No, it's definitely not a requirement. They've been trying to make it a requirement, but it's not a requirement in this country to...
But it sounds like best practice.
It's very much best practice because it's probably one of your best CYAs ever.
Absolutely.
You know, and then, you know...
How long would you keep that for?
I did not know that.
If you got all the abbreviations, I said, hey, I mean, the
CYA, cover your booty.
Yeah, you can't say that.
Yeah, hey,
somebody
hey,
you mentioned that the whole 10 p.m. thing. What can be said after 10 p.m.?
Well, there is a, there is a safe harbor rule. I think it's after 10 or 11 p.m.
It's 10.
10, yeah. It's after 10 p.m. it's your freedom of speech zone is basically what it is. So basically your programming can be, can be indecent, you can get away with a little bit more.
I think it's obscene but not indecent.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's obscene.
Profane, but not
profane.
Indecent.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean...
Profane is indecent, not
obscene. I think it's obscene.
I mean, you should...
Right.
I mean,
profane,
you know,
profane.
Yeah.
Indecent
yeah.
and not obscene.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be like it's a time of the night that you can get away with using the word shit on the air, but you couldn't, like, play like these old phone sex tapes and stuff,
there goes my program.
So, what about music? So you can play music with shit and all that stuff after 10?
Yeah.
I would think you could.
You can.
Cuss words? All the cuss words?
The DJ can never utter the seven words.
No, I'm talking about recorded music.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, so you can have a recorded music with the F-bomb in it, but you are limited to a certain number of fucks. There is a number.
Per song?
Per song, and there are hip-hop songs that way exceed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of hip-hop on our station, so we know, I don't know exactly, because I never play one that has enough fucks. But you limited to a certain number of fucks per hour. And,
what is this, a
brothel? I'm serious. I mean,
because I'm going to say the B word on TV.
Well, another thing is, remember, just because it's on the TV doesn't mean it's a broadcast. Sometimes on TV, it's cable. All of that stuff on the wire doesn't have anything to do with the FCC.
Cable is,
I mean, I'm here on NBC and Ellen, I mean, all them people.
Well, I mean, the FCC is the FCC. If you want to send me an email, I'll send you the station policy and explains how many fucks.
And plus also, that's the other thing, too, that you got to take into consideration is, what do you want your station policy to be?
Yeah, that's...
Right,
exactly.
Because the thing is if you got a station that, that Junior can't listen to at 10:30 at night, that's going to scare away your potential underwriters.
Right.
So
you got to think of it from a business perspective too. What is in the best interest of your station?
Right. I don't know. In a military community, we're not going to go for it. But some folks wouldn't be so turned off by it in the military community.
Oh, thanks.
After 10.
Oh, there you go.
Anybody else? Cards.
Anyway,
I'm good.
I'm good.
In the station policy, there's already a lawyer.
Thank you.
FCC website.
Is
there a book you could recommend? What's our reference point of reference for doing this on a day-to-day operation?
For doing LPFM, you can go to recnet.com. I have a lot of information online there, including the texts of all the subpart G rules, and I also have explanations on there. I've got the history of the rules, how the rules have changed over the past 14 years. So there's a lot of reference information up there. I'm trying to add more information as I can. I'm just very time limited.
I'm so embarrassed. I was writing a note and didn't hear where you said.
RECnet.com.
Oh, your website.
My website, yeah.
Well, see, for those of us that are new, you know, and I've done a lot of creative projects, but this is kind of scary. Because you're out there on the air, a lot of people are, so you're making your mistakes in public. So of course, you know, we're going to have a mission statement, all that kind of stuff, get our content, try to put all that stuff together. But I mean, I do have the timeline. You know, I'm paying attention, you know, to all the different kinds of things that you're suggesting. But I think one of the things that would be helpful to me, maybe this is somewhere online, is like, what does an average sort of a day look like for a station manager?
Day in the life of a station manager.
Ask that guy.
I'd love to know that. Well, I get that there's humor involved. I realize that. But I also mean that there are things that do happen on a daily basis, right? And then there's all that other stuff that goes on, too. But I think we want to have some idea of what those day-to-day things are that we need to be looking out for, you know, preparing for, like, before they happen. Because we're scared. I'm scared.
It's a lot.
I'm just going to put it out there.
It's a lot.
I'm not scared of much normally, but I'm a little scared.
Streaming right now, if you're doing a streaming radio station, start following FCC regulations today. Just start treating your streaming station like it's a real LPFM. That way, all of your personalities and all of your processes will get used to the rules. That's the first thing you can do to get yourself prepared for the day when you flip the switch.
We were planning on doing that for 2 months. Just launch online, do a soft launch.
Do legal IDs even.
Yeah,
you know, just do the whole thing, you know.
But just, yeah, do it do it online.
If you haven't gone on the area, how can you do it?
Then you don't worry about
your calls.
Good point.
I'm talking about making sure that you're, you know, that you're IDing on time during the top of the hours, making sure that the mouths of your DJs and your talk people are clean, you know, making sure, you know, that they get used to that, because, you know, a lot of internet radio stations, you can get away with more.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're transitioning from an internet only to going on the air, you're more vulnerable to have somebody slip on the air. Now, I mean, the FCC is not going to throw a $10,000 fine on you if you drop an F-bomb here, you know, accidentally. If it's intentional, that's a different story. You know, there might be some issues that might come up, especially if somebody complains.
Well, the source of my fear, if I may...
Yeah, go ahead.
...is not necessarily specifically that I'm afraid of the FCC. It's that... you know, having people that are on the board, they may have irrational fears of the FCC. So there you are, right, trying to run your day-to-day operations, which, as we know, is all involves all kinds of excitement, and people come in and they say, I was going to do my show, I'm running late because the dog threw up on the cat, and then, you know, I got a flat tire, and let me tell you about Aunt Edna, you know, and she's not feeling well. And so you get all of these things, you're trying to keep things running. And then the FCC contacts the station, and now somebody on the board gets a sense, oh, wait a minute, we've got a problem. Oh, well, wait a minute, then they may blow that out of proportion, right? So now you're trying to You know what I mean? You're in the middle of all of this, right? That seems a little overwhelming. Well, am I projecting, or is this what we're
No,
happens?
No, it's right on.
Well, I think you've got a lot of legitimate concerns there, and you know,
okay, good.
And that and
that's why
and
I'm
the
scared.
Idea is you know you got to have contingencies and you got to have processes in place to handle these things.
Right.
You know, if you've got somebody late for a program, you better have a backup program queued up and ready to go just in case.
Right.
You got to have a backup plan.
Sure.
You know, the FCC, you got to have rules and processes in your office, in your organization, that says what to do when Uncle Charlie comes knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
Yeah.
You know what? You know this is where you know this is the place where your political file is located. Your engineering logs are located here. Your station license is posted here. So, you know, everybody knows how to get to everything. You know that's at your station. You know there's. You know, one of the big things that's going to get you into trouble is to send an inspector away and have him come back at another time.
Right.
You just never do that. If you're open for business, whoever's there has got to know what they're doing, and they've got to know where things are. You never turn an inspector away. That's going to get you. You know that can come back and bite you. You know, and it's just as long as you have expectations, you need to have expectations of your volunteers and of your paid staff. I'm working on this for KRKD in Los Angeles,
right.
And I've already got rules already of what I'm expecting from anybody who wants to do programming on the station. You know, I'm going to have an approval process. I mean, I may not listen to every single word that they say. But you know, there's going to be an expectation of what kind of programming. Certain things are not, you know, certain things we're not going to allow, or certain things we don't want, you know, certain directions we don't want to go with the station. You know, we've already made a decision that our programming is going to be 100% secular. We're not going to have any religious programming whatsoever on the station. That is a decision that we've made. And these are the kinds of things that you need to. Make sure that your talent knows that we have certain rules in place, and this is what's expected of you if you want to continue programming with us. You've got a schedule to live up to. You've got a commitment. You know, we're saying you've got a 13-week commitment. If you want to do a show, we're going to do it in a season. We're going to do a standard season format, 13 weeks. I think you are first, and then you. So, did you have a question?
Yeah, so we have a board. We've been around for since 2009. Just before we applied, we actually had like an entire board changeover. But
mm-hmm.
That aside, we aren't traditionally an organization that runs a radio station.
Right,
and so.
Many of them are not.
Right, and yeah, right.
Yeah.
So like, as far as dividing up the decision making process and accountability, like how we don't even know how content decisions get made yet, and you touched on a little bit of that. Like, where can we go to look at other people's? Because I just imagine that like a lot of developing this is sort of cutting and pasting what we like and don't like.
Good question.
Like, where do we dig that up at?
Our station, what we did is we contacted a station in Ashland, which is about, I don't know, an hour and a half away, and we asked to look at their policies. And we took what we liked, and they said, yeah, by all means, just, you know, word for word, take our policies if that's what you want to use. And and one of the first things we did was build a steering committee. So there are six people that, you know, have different tasks, and that was like the first thing we did. So that was one way to do it. Look at other stations, what their policies are, how they came up with it, you know, who does what in the board, all that stuff. Anyway. But anyway, I don't know.
You had a question. Let me get to her first.
It's just kind of piggybacking on that, because I think what it is it would be great to know kind of if there are some models of best practices that we could follow around. When you say having clear expectations, you know, to me that sounds like getting some real, you know.
I would think that some of the, you know, some of the full power stations came out, even maybe across the street here, might have some, you know, some process documents that maybe they're willing to share with the GRC.
This might go a little bit into the governance.
This is more governance. This is more. How do you want to run your station? Do you want, you know, how much reach does the board have? Is the board just there to oversee the whole operation, and then you have a level underneath it to manage the day to day?
Or is the board all there is right now, except a wild and crazy group of programmers?
Right. No. Mm-hmm. But in terms of operationalizing it as part of, because we run lots of programs, so you know we got kids in daycare and we got seniors, you know, and now we have a radio station. So it's for us. It's kind of, what does that look like? I mean, I know our board meets all the time. We're kind of on autopilot when it comes to that.
I figured, you know, you have a vision for your station, you know, and you need to come up with a vision statement. How, you know, and you kind of had to do that when you applied for the license.
Absolutely.
You basically had to say, how is this station, how is radio going to mesh in with my overall organization's educational program, and how is it going to advance that program? So think about that educational statement that you wrote. Think about maybe rewriting it, not for filing, but just for rewriting it, just for the purpose of your board and for planning.
Okay.
And think about, where do you want the station to go? What would you like the station to sound like? Just, you know, the whole entire board. And how does it mesh in with what your organization does? Those are the things to think about. Now, you had a question.
For our shows, can you share that? I mean, sell that airtime? Or, because like on my internet, for each hour, I charge $25 donation to go back to my nonprofit as a net revenue stream.
So you want to sell airtime? Like,
or,
so yeah, far it's just internet.
If you want to do shows, I mean, that's how I do it on my internet. I mean, that's the way where I generate money for my station. It's a revenue stream. So I wanted to do it on my FM. I didn't know if I could do it on FM. So say someone want an hour, I want to charge them for that hour.
First thing that comes to mind here is sponsorship identification. If they buy an hour of time, you have to identify them as a sponsor.
Okay. All right.
That's the key thing, because that's the payola rule.
Okay.
Right there. Okay. Now they cannot promote or do any of the NCE rules. Your best bet is to try to avoid this. Your best bet is just is avoiding this, because this is trampling on deep in. Now the other rule is that you cannot enter into any kind of a time brokerage or management agreement with any other broadcast licensee, including another LPFM station. So if
it's a time brokerage.
Yeah. Basically, let's use full power commercial as an example. Let's say there's Clear Channel still can have one more station in the market based on the ownership rules. You're an independent owner, you own the station. Clear Channel comes to you and says, "Listen, we're not going to buy your station. What we want to do is we want to buy time on your station. We want to buy 24/7 for, you know, maybe 6 months or something. And we'll pay you to run the station and put our programming on there." So basically it's a time brokerage agreement. So basically you cannot, and so, you know, so in that case, you know, they're already a broadcast licensee. But they're buying time on your station. That's called a local marketing agreement or an LMA. You know, that's not allowed in LPFM. And the reason why we're doing that is to keep LPFMs from being used as translators.
Absolutely.
For other networks and other stations.
But for just individuals, like one of my shows, they just teach a financial 101. They want to transition over to FM and teach financial literacy. So as long as they sponsor that outlet, they could teach financial literacy?
As long as they don't promote, do call to actions, give prices, give phone, and I mean, they can give phone numbers. They're allowed to give a phone number and a URL, but you cannot incite people to call. You cannot say, call me now, in the call now in the next 10 minutes and you'll get a free, free tax advice or something like that.
Most of our shows are just calling for advice or direction. I mean, so long as we can have that, they can still have that feedback between hosts and...
Yeah, just be careful.
Okay. Because y'all trying to figure out, should we do everything taped or should we do it live?
I would do everything taped. I would do everything taped because that way, in case the programmer crosses the line...
Yeah.
You can review it, edit it, and take out the offending material.
That's CYA.
And you need to make sure that you have an agreement with. You got to make sure that you have an understanding with whoever it is that's buying the time. That there's certain things you cannot do on the air.
Okay, so pre-record.
I would. That would be if you're going to do this. I would not do it live.
You listen to everything that everybody. Yeah.
Because you know what's going to happen is you've got there's media monitoring services out there.
Yeah, we got Universal and Omaha. They take everything. Yes. TV shows, radio shows, they take everything.
Exactly. There's commercial companies out there that do nothing but record radio, and they do it. The reason is it's so that way a commercial station they can monitor the competition. And that's mainly what it's for. It's for monitoring the competition, seeing who's buying time on their stations. And such, so that way they don't have to have people listening all the time. Mm-hmm. But they can also be monitoring you for compliance. Mm-hmm. You know, especially second adjacent waiver stations. Because they're going to do everything they can to try to, if they wanted to, they could do everything they can to try to take you down. I mean, yeah, they have to have a bona fide complaint. But...
I think I've even read something about some lawyer somewhere monitoring this stuff and then like finding violations and taking them to competitors. Like, hey, let me help you get these people.
That sounds like a lawyer thing.
Yeah.
I have a question. If we may have a hard time staffing the studio for a while as we get started, and if we do it remotely some of the time, and if somebody comes to do an inspection and there's nobody in the studio,
well, you got to make sure that you've got a good phone number on file with the FCC,
so they can call.
So that way they can call you, because there is no law that requires an attended operation for LPFM. So you can be in an unattended operation. Just the FCC needs to be able to reach somebody. Also, too, the FCC needs to be able to reach somebody in case the station is interfering. And you've got to be able to shut down that transmitter within 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have some kind of, either somebody there or you've got to have some kind of remote control. A lot of the transmitters, the Nautels that you see in the room there, a lot of them now have web interfaces. So as long as you have internet access at your transmitter site, you just hook up a Cat5 cable into the back of that, hook that into your router, hook it in your hub, and you can get on a web browser and get on your and monitor your transmitter, take your readings, make sure that your power's in compliance and everything. But if necessary, just shut it down.
I had another question about compliance. The locally originated content. I've had it explained to me a couple times, but I just wanted to get it again. Like, what qualifies as locally originated content?
The mileage.
Well, basically, it's any original program content that is generated from within 10 miles, based on your media market, either 10 or 20 miles from the transmitting antenna. Putting music on a computer in automation doesn't count. And you can only repeat programming once for it to be considered towards the 8 hours.
Automation doesn't count. Playing recorded music does, right?
Oh, yeah. Playing, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're not expecting you to have live bands in there, but if you have a DJ who's there spinning tracks, mm-hmm. and talking between records and giving out local information and being there. Mm-hmm. That's local programming.
Yeah, no, that's right.
That's local programming. Okay. Having a computer, voice tracking, no. No, that does not count towards your aid.
Let me ask a question. What's the balance between like playing music and actually allowing shows? Do you guys, because I see some people just do all shows and just a little music, all talk shows, seem like, so do you guys balance
it? All depends on your station's direction. That's, you know, some stations are community stations, where they play a lot of community talk programming. I mean, you know, just coming into KHOI and listening to them for the last few days, every time I turn it on, it's something different. I like that. To me, that doesn't bore people. And every time you you may not agree with what they're saying, but maybe the next show you'll agree with. Mm-hmm. But it's this wide variety of voices. You know, if you want to play music all the time and you know, it's totally up to you. There's no law saying, you know, it's not like Japan where they used to have a law where you can only have so much talk and so much music. Actually, Britain has similar laws like that too. You know, that control the actual content. But, you know, there's no law saying that you have to have so much music and so much talk. You know, the FCC does not really have any jurisdiction at all over programming content. And that's because of the First Amendment. You know, the only time that they can get it, that they can get you is for obscenity. You know, anything, you know, any obscenity and stuff like that.
Political endorsements.
Political endorsements. Fake EAS tones.
You cannot say, I'm going to kill the president.
You cannot say that in any
anywhere.
You cannot say that in any venue.
Right.
This country. So, you know, those are just some of the things that you gotta, you know, that you gotta, you know, be careful about, and you know, just know that the FCC doesn't care whether you are all talk, all music, what language you speak. They don't care. And they cannot make a decision based on that. And they have denied, you know, they have denied a lot of informal objections. Probably the big one was in the one I cite all the time is in D.C. In D.C., one of the local jazz stations, one of the non-commercial jazz stations, sold the station to the C-SPAN, and C-SPAN was going to bring that up as a C-SPAN station in D.C., which would be only appropriate. But they received all these informal objections and objections to the transfer from people because of the jazz programming that was being provided on there. And the FCC said, because of the First Amendment, we have no control over the entertainment format decisions of any broadcast station, and that cannot be used either for or against the station. Same thing in Los Angeles with the Hispanic station out there that was trying to get a waiver. You cannot use that. Jazz station out there too, trying to do the same thing. You cannot. Your format, the FCC doesn't care about your format when it comes to making decisions, especially on waivers.
Yeah. My understanding is after you're on the air, after 3 years, you can form your own, like the station can have mm-hmm. its own board of directors.
Yes, that's what we're planning to do with KRKD, is after 3 years, after you're licensed for 3 years, you can transfer control. You can do a complete transfer of control of your organization, meaning more than 50% of your board. Everybody, you can change the mission, you can even change it to another organization altogether, as long as that other organization would qualify as a non-commercial educational licensee.
So it still has to be a 501c.
It doesn't have to be a 501c.
Non-profit.
It could be
a non-profit.
It has to be recognized by the state as a corporation.
Right.
As a not-for-profit corporation.
And can that transfer be compensated financially? Like, can money change hands?
Only reasonable amounts of money for the tangible items. So, like, if you're selling, like, not just the license has no value. But if you're selling studio equipment, if you're selling a building, a tower, that's tangible. fair market value, but you cannot, you know, you cannot sell the license for like $50,000 or something if you're in like a major market.
Interesting.
Two questions. Some of what we do it deals with, you know, bringing grievances against chain of command or commanders and such like that. And I know there's free speech issues that apply to service members not being able to publicly speak out against their chain of command. Y'all might not be familiar with that, but I know.
I kind of know where you're going with this.
We want to facilitate discourse about, you know, problematic commands and things like that. But we also want to avoid like libel and slander and things like that. I feel like it would be safe to say that the post commander, for example, is a public figure. But anybody below that, like, or how would we satire or what?
And you want to get programming from their PAO?
Right.
Well, you know, they can listen in the morning when we like. These decisions haven't been made yet, but like.
I would be very careful about that. Number one, you don't want to make enemies with your community.
Right.
And you know, there might be people out there that are near and dear to the family of this commander. Or this, you know, or the CO or whoever, you know, the post commander, you know,
you could complain.
The thing is they could have an influence on who donates to your station.
Or,
you know, I don't see this. I see this more of a business decision. I would be very careful about doing that, especially if you want to maintain a relationship with that base.
Right.
I would be very careful. You know, don't bite the hand that feeds you.
We're just
joking.
Can he ask one? You've asked a bunch. Can you ask?
I kind of want to go back to his question on far as.
Sorry.
Because when you say that, we got to you recommend pre-recording.
Yeah.
And so that means I would have to have like a couple of studios, because we still got to be programming a regular program, and then we have to do pre-recording, so we need a couple of studios.
Or people can record at home. Mm. You know, people can record at home very easily.
And for the purpose, somebody needs to listen to it before somebody else.
It's always a good idea. I mean, that way you can just, you know, if you want to run through it or not, you know, it's up to you. Again, you know, it depends on how deep or how worried are you about those people. I would be scared blankless about allowing total strangers that maybe, yeah, so they paid me $50 or whatever.
So it depends on how well you know the person.
An hour, because who knows what's in there?
Yeah.
How do you know they're not playing phone sex tapes? I mean, come on. You know, you've got to make sure you're responsible for every single word that is uttered on your station, even if you're not the one that recorded it. So, you know, you've got to take those things into consideration and really think about your business plan. Maybe doing block time is not a good idea. I know I'm definitely not going to do that with KRKD.
Block time meaning
what he's proposing is somebody who wants to come in and say, pay $50 and buy an hour of time to say whatever they want on the air. I mean, barring any, you know, legal restrictions. For non-commercial stations, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea at all. And I think it goes against the whole idea of community radio. You know, if you've got a good message that's out there, you know, let people have the air, and then you can fundraise on the end of that for the station. Because remember, you can fundraise for the station. You cannot fundraise for any other cause.
Is that a specific LPFM rule?
That is a non-commercial rule.
Maybe I better find out where.
So, like, for example... Now, there are exceptions that are made during major disasters. But if you are a, you know, if your organization is, you know, if you have an organization, you know, if your station, like for example, your station cannot collect money for United Way. You cannot do a United Way fund drive on your station. You can only do a fund drive on your station to support your station. The religious broadcasters are trying to get this changed. But the FCC has made exceptions in the past. They made an exception for Tohoku. They made an exception for Haiti. They made an exception for Katrina. They made exceptions for Sandy. You know, whenever there's a major disaster, but you still have to tell the FCC what you're doing, who's going to be the benefactor of the money and stuff. So there's still a lot of paperwork that you've got to do if at a time of a natural disaster that something like that comes up. They're trying to get that rule changed too, so to allow for like local emergencies to be able to collect for somebody else. But there's got to be a triggering event.
So say if like Pilger, Nebraska, basically the whole town was wiped out by two tornadoes.
Mm-hmm.
And other station raised money for that. And then do you have to get a mandate from the federal government stating that they don't get funds or is designated as...
That's if the federal government decides they want to do something about it.
Then it's okay to do it then?
Now keep in mind, this is a non-commercial rule. Right. A commercial station, your Clear Channel stations, can raise all the money they want. Let them do that. Unless you get an authority from the Federal Communications Commission, if they put out something that specifically says that, you know, stations in this area are allowed to fundraise for this emergency.
Oh boy, we looked so into this, and where we ended up with it after asking lots of people was that we could fundraise for other groups, which is really important to a lot of us in our community to be able to support mm-hmm. the nonprofits in our area. It's like crucial, as long as we don't alter the regular programming schedule. So like not go ahead and have a whole pledge mm-hmm. drive all day long for the health center.
Mm-hmm.
But we can air fundraising messages for them, like a PSA.
Did you guys do co-branding, co-messages, or in did you create a similar message that identify your partnership?
Mm-hmm. No. I would just be careful, that's all. Again, be careful.
Well, then I'll try to look up the rule.
And consult and consult and consult. That's all I've got to say on it. Anyway, yeah. We've only got a few minutes left, so we have...
Are you available for people to ask
yes.
stuff?
Yes. After I'm leaving here, I'm going back into the big room, so
okay.
you can always come
table.
By.
You have a table.
I'll be at there's one of the round tables I'll be at over there for a while.
In the dance studio
in
downstairs?
The dance hall, yeah. Up here. Right up here.
In the conference room?
Oh, I'm sorry,
right
wrong.
Yeah.
Right up there.
I think you were first.
Yeah, I just have, just quick, in terms of anything, in terms of insurance that we should be aware of, anything like that. I mean, we have not-for-profit insurance that covers our agency, but is there anything additionally that we should be aware
like
of?
Like you have liability and directors and officers protection?
Yes, to a certain extent.
That gets into the earlier question about board members.
Right. So there's but I'm thinking kind of comprehensively, not just the individuals, but also
I'm thinking like the tower.
The tower, yeah. Mm-hmm. Lightning. Or you know, if we're thinking of having mm-hmm. it located in the basement, so what if something happens and we have a flood or stuff like that? Is there something I should be aware of?
Well, I know some site owners, like American Tower, requires you to carry a policy for any equipment that is on their tower. So I know that. I know that for a fact.
Okay.
So
I was wondering if there's anything else we should be aware of.
Sounds like you're thinking in the right direction to talk to your insurance person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we have some kind of broadcast insurance. I don't know what.
Okay.
There's, I don't know the details of it, but I know
there's an insurance of a type that directly affects your board members in terms of errors and omissions, which is if by chance you do commit slander on the air, and then newspapers and other things that do print have the same for libel. So, you know,
That's probably insurance.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm on the board and I'm okay going on the cover, but what are they going to get? I need a job.
Exactly.
And there's, you know, people on our board that maybe do have some money in a couple houses or whatever.
So, yeah.
I was going to say, they're going to have a really hard time getting anything out. You know, you can't get milk out of a turnip. So, you know, let's just say.
Thank you.
I thought it was blood.
Yeah, that too. You know, get blood or milk or something out of the turnip.
How's chocolate?
I mean,
chocolate. Yeah. There we go.
Turnip milk is delicious.
Japan? You from Japan?
No, I just have a lot of close connections there with some of the stuff I do.
So you speak? Do you speak?
I wish.
I mean, how are we going to read it then? I mean.
Well, you turn the card over.
It's English and
Turn it over.
No, thank you for that translation. I appreciate that. I mean, but what does it mean? Oh, that's your.
Turn the card over. I happen to have two-sided cards.
So that's your name in.
That's
in Japanese.
That's my legal alias in Japanese.
Oh
yeah.
Man, that'd be kind of hard to.
Well, you just
the counterfeit.
You just yeah.
For sure.
Good luck, y'all.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah.
Right. William, have you met the Detroit women?
No, I haven't.
Is this one of the Detroit women?
Okay.
Say hello to William from Omaha.
Yes.